Hello and welcome to the Paper Club Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Rafael Herrera, and with me as always is my co-host, Marcia Olivaida, lead data scientist at Deeper Insights AI Consultancy. How are you doing today, Marcia?
Hi, I'm doing fine. Hi, everyone.
And with us today, we have a fantastic guest, somebody that I've been very excited to have on the show for quite a while. We have Leticia Fernandez, a senior data scientist and generative AI ambassador for Deeper Insight. Leticia, how are you doing today?
Hi, Raf. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, no problem. We're pleased to have you on. You really know your way around all this AI stuff. I'm just happy to have the both of you on. For all of our listeners, every month, we invite Deeper Insights experts, just like Leticia, on the show to highlight and to discuss any kind of academic papers from the data science literature. And this month, our guest Leticia has brought an interesting paper today. What is this about?
The title of the paper is Active Retrieval Augmented Generation. The authors are from the Carnegie Mellon University, CAI Lab, and also Meta AI Research. In this paper, the authors propose a method that is called Forward-Looking Active Retrieval Augmented Generation, FLAIR for short. And what is FLAIR? So FLAIR is a retrieval augmented generation method that distinguishes from other methods by iteratively using the predictions of a large language model in order to query and retrieve relevant documents to enhance the responses of the large language model. This way, if the model is uncertain about a given answer, it will look for more information in order to rewrite the answer in a more accurate way. And the authors here, they hypothesize that a large language model should only retrieve information when they lack the required knowledge in order to avoid unnecessary or inappropriate retrieval that may occur in other types of augmented retrieval.
It kind of sounds like what you're saying is this method essentially is almost like stopping an AI from searching endlessly. It's almost like a little like, hey, you already know about this. Let's move on. Kind of like that.
Exactly. So what the most traditional information retrieval methods do related with large language model augmented generation is that they will search for documents in a knowledge base in order to enhance their answers. Because if we think about it, large language models were trained with a given data set and it will be limited. If we look at ChatGPT, for instance, it was trained until September 2021. So if you plan to ask it questions about more recent events, it won't be able to answer it unless it has some external tool which it can use to retrieve more recent information. So some of the tools may go into the internet and research information in order for the large language model to have enough context to provide a response. But this doesn't always occur. So imagine that you have a data set for your business applications that you would like to query information from. So instead of fine-tuning a model using that data, which has obviously some really high costs attached, and also if you don't have enough data in order to train these models, you won't be able to retrieve good results from it. So an alternative that is typically used is to use these retrieval augmented generation methods, where you have a database with your internal documents, and you have a retrieval method, which will be used by the large language model every time it lacks context during its responses. So it will look into the database, retrieve the most relevant documents given the input question, and then formulate an answer using that context.
So essentially, if it thinks about, hey, do I know any of this stuff? No, I don't know anything about, you know, Batman after 2005. So I have to go and check the comic books that I have on my bookshelf just to make sure that this data is correct. But it's doing it in a far more sophisticated and important way than just learning about Batman.
Exactly, yeah.
That is like the foundation of all of this ChatGPT stuff at this point, right?
Yes, that's right. Why do we want ChatGPT to do, right? So we want to be able to retrieve information from it. And even though ChatGPT can generate a really nice and impressive text, sometimes that's not enough. It has to have the knowledge that you are searching for in order to provide answers that will be valuable for you. And one of the best ways of doing that is to connect the information that you're seeking for answers into the large language model somehow, using these information retrieval methods in order to provide the answers that you're looking for.
I think another important question here is the hallucinations of the large language models. And this is like this retrieval augmented generation is kind of a way to overcome or partly overcome the hallucination problem. Because the model, if you ask a question, it will always output something, even if it doesn't have the factual knowledge to back up that, if it's like a question that requires some facts. But even if it doesn't have that information, it will say something, even with low confidence. And by using this kind of information retrieval systems, like these external knowledge bases, it will be easier for the large language model to know the source, right? Or at least to tell the user what's the source it has used for that additional context that you just mentioned, Leticia. Yeah, so I would like as well to explore how this could be used to overcome the hallucination problem and how it's being used.
Yeah, so that's a very good point, Marcia. And I think it's something that the authors really focus on their approach, because when they are doing these active retrieval, they don't do it like every time they need. So they need to decide, when should I be querying again the database in order to rewrite the answer? And what they do is that initially the large language model will retrieve an answer. Then they will measure the uncertainty of the answer. So we have log probabilities for each token that from which the sentence is composed. And then according to that probability, if it's lower than a given threshold, then that means that the model is uncertain about the answer. And that also might be related with the hallucinations, because if the model is hallucinating too much, that might mean that it's not so certain about the response. And the uncertainty, it's something that we can measure. So if the uncertainty is lower than a given threshold, what this tool is going to make is identify the words that have the lowest probability and use that sentence and those words to generate more questions about those specific words. And based on those questions, we will be looking again into our knowledge base and retrieving more relevant documents that can help us answer questions about the uncertainties from those answers. And this way, based on these new contexts, we can rewrite the answer in a more certain way. And when this process will obviously continue iteratively, and it will stop once enough certainty on the large language model response is achieved.
But all of this still happens in the blink of an eye. Essentially, it's searching and combing all these different options and asking all these questions instantly.
Yes. I mean, it will take, well, a couple of seconds to query. And if you're using OpenAI models, you will have to do some requests to the API. So there are multiple pieces that can delay a bit the process, but it will take a couple of seconds, you know, not more than that.
Impressive. Just the fact that you could ask that many questions. In a lot of ways, this all reminds me of a two-year-old, because you can ask a two-year-old a question and sometimes they'll just like, they'll give you an answer, but it's completely crazy. That's essentially a hallucination. So and that's what two-year-olds do too. And they also ask thousands of questions in a minute. It's amazing. So that's basically what we've made. We've made a digital two-year-old that happens to be really good at looking stuff up.
Exactly.
So what would you say would be the main contributions of this paper, Leticia? This ability to know exactly when and how and what to retrieve. So sometimes it relies on their own knowledge without looking at the knowledge base, because it already contains that factual knowledge in the model parameters. And sometimes it really needs, it's not very confident, so it needs to resort to external data sources. So do you think that's the main contribution of the paper, or something that's, yes, that I missed?
Yeah, so I think it's completely related with that. So they were able, the main contribution of the paper is that they were able to create this simple and also generic retrieval augmented generation approach. It's generic because you can use any large language model that you would like to. Also, any retrieval methods can be also adapted into these methods. And it will actively decide when and what to retrieve throughout this generation process. And it's also an attempt of reducing the hallucinations of the model. The main takeaway is that by providing more flexibility for the large language model to decide when and what to retrieve during the generation process can actually improve the final response of the model.
Yeah. So it makes it speedy, makes it hardy.
Yes.
Very cool. I like that.
But there are some shortcomings. For instance, I'm thinking, well, I think with all, not with specific method, FLAIR, but any retrieval augmented generation, is that we are bounded by the context window size of the large language model we're using. They said it's general, so we can use any kind of large language model. So that's a plus, because you can use a large language model with a larger context window. But still, there's always a limit, right? At least currently. I think this will be solved pretty soon, though. But is there a way? Did they consider this? Did they mention it in the paper? What are your thoughts on this?
About the context window, that's something that they don't really approach on the paper. Because if we think about it, that's something that probably the retrieval method can handle. So if we look at LangChain retrieval approaches, they actually have several approaches which seek to overcome that limitation. So instead of you returning, imagine that you're retrieving 10 documents that are relevant to that input query. Instead of using those 10 documents as context to provide a given answer, we can look into the individual documents and start already retrieving some answers. So for instance, I'll rephrase. If you want to make a summary of a document, of a given document that has 200 pages, so the large language model won't be able to read all those pages because it usually has a limit on the context window that it can handle. So one approach is to chunk these documents into smaller documents. And what we can do is to have the large language model to summarize each one of these smaller documents. And this way, we can keep the context window smaller and it won't be a limit for the model to generate. And then we use the smaller summaries for each chunk in order to enhance the second chunk and third chunk. And this contextual information will all be used as a final summary of the document. So it's a way that through multiple retrieval methods approaches, we can apply in order to overcome the limits of the context window of the model. It's something that is not particularly explored in this FLAIR approach, but since it is flexible enough to use different retrieval methods, we can definitely try these other approaches.
That sounds very interesting.
Since we're talking about FLAIR, and FLAIR is essentially helping solve this problem, I'm curious, Marcia, you mentioned this. You believe that hallucinations might become a thing of the past, that we might solve that. Could you tell me a little bit about why you think that? I'm curious, because it seems almost like just you guessing. Obviously, you didn't research this, but just based on your experience being an AI master, why do you think that? I'm just curious.
By just based on things I've been listening, like AI experts talking about. Also, you know, it just seems like intuitive to me that all these problems will be solved eventually because people are actively doing research on these.
Has there been an improvement in hallucinations since it started?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Me neither. Okay. It's too recent to know, right?
It's just my hunch. I think there's a lot of research being put into that and people are very concerned with this. So I think since it's such a, it's a high priority problem to be solved, one of the highest priority problems. So I believe there's a lot of AI researchers out there that will solve the problem. So that's why I believe there will be progress on this. And
makes sense.
A lot of problems have been already solved that were kind of a problem 3 months ago, they are no longer a problem now. And this was also related with context windows getting larger and larger. I think we are now reaching like a billion tokens or trillion.
Yes.
So, it's just the natural, I believe in the scientific progress that's being done. And there's a lot of smart people putting their heads on this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it makes sense then. I just assumed, as somebody that isn't an AI master, that this was just going to be a part of the game. Like, no matter what, there's always going to be a little bit of space there where there were going to be hallucinations, and we just had to be aware of it. It's almost like when you ride a bicycle. You know, you might know how to ride a bicycle, but there's always a small chance you might fall off.
And that's desirable, as I said. It's desirable in some sense, in some cases, to have hallucinations. It always has this bad rap, this bad connotation. But hallucinations are very useful for creative endeavors. If you're kind of writing, you want to write short story, creative short story, or, you know, a script for a movie. Yeah, you want it to be creative. You don't want it to, you know, just be very factual and rely on things that were already said or done. So we need it also know, perhaps use a different word, hallucinations. It's a bit...
Right.
You know.
So what you're saying is hallucinations are not just mistakes, because again, this is how I've interpreted it in the media, the way people have talked about it. Hallucinations are mistakes where it just kind of went a little bit crazy and it just said what it wanted. But in fact, it can be interpreted as creativity, almost like the ability to be creative, and the cornerstone of creativity is being able to make some stuff up so it makes sense. Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Precisely.
That's interesting. I love that. I had no idea. That helps me, and hopefully it'll help all of our listeners understand what hallucinations actually are. So we don't want to completely get rid of them. We just want to refine them a little bit.
Exactly. And being able to measure them as well. Because if it's something that will really impact your business applications, and you really want to get rid of them, if you are able to measure them, it will give you already some insights on how to overcome those hallucinations.
Because currently, you don't know if it's hallucinating or not unless you have a knowledge about the topic that's being discussed. So you need to kind of be an expert, or at least know way more about that to identify that hallucination. But that really defeats the point, because you're using the large language model to, you know, get knowledge you don't know about. So
people are treating it like a search engine where maybe it's not quite perfect for that just yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. No, I love that. Obviously, we've seen that there's a lot of potential in this research. So what do you think the biggest impact on this will be, Leticia? Obviously, we talked a little bit about it. Hey, we can reduce those hallucinations, but is there anything more beyond that?
Yes, I think so. I believe that this method and all retrieval augmented generation methods will have a big impact nowadays, because with the hype of using generative AI technologies, I think many businesses are questioning, how can I use this large language model together with my data, my internal data, to ask questions about this data. And I think this type of methods will be mostly the answer for most of these applications that people are searching for.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest use case, really, using your own proprietary data with these large language models, because they understand the language, they understand, they have these also some reasoning abilities over the text, the language.
So you're saying, Leticia, that there's a chance that one day all of the journaling that I've done over the last 10 or 20 years that I've done digitally, I could load into a system and it will tell me how crazy I am.
Yes, exactly.
Finally, some answers. I'll take it. I don't care if it's an AI person telling me that. I want to know. So that's fantastic. No, that definitely something I could see companies wanting to know. Not necessarily that they're crazy. I'm sure they know that already. But how they could actually mine some of that data and use it for enterprise reasons, all that business fun stuff. So that's really good stuff. That seems like a great place to end there. Leticia, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. This is really interesting paper. Really found that fascinating. And it really touches on all of the things that are going on in the AI world right now. I think everyone, the hype, although it has subsided a little bit, we all still love ChatGPT. We all are aware of OpenAI, and this was definitely a key component in building that, at least in the way that we know it now. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
It's been a pleasure to have Leticia. I wanted her to be in the show for quite some time. She always brings a lot of knowledge and expertise into the table, especially on generative AI for NLP. And yeah, I learned a lot, especially I think the main insight for me was this hypothesized correlation between the hallucination and the probability of the tokens and the synthesis as a whole. So I think that's very, very interesting. And also your ideas on how to do retrieval augmented generation, Leticia. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here with you too. Thank you.
And also a special thank you to my always there co-host, Marcia. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
And also thank you to our listeners. Obviously, we're here every single month discussing data science and academic papers. So if you haven't already, please subscribe to our feed. Reach out to us at thepaperclub@deeperinsights.com. If you have any questions about this episode or any previous episodes, we're happy to discuss things with you. Maybe we'll even read it on the air. Why not, right? And until next month, I want to thank my guest, Leticia, my co-host, Marcia. I'm Raphael. We'll see you next month.
Bye. Bye.